Hello and welcome to Volume 45, Number 42 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 17th of October 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, the Royal Hotel is rescued from the squatters. The police investigate a reported rape with no victim and no perpetrator. And the villagers of Browston are up in arms over a planning application. Details on these and many other local stories in just a while. Plus some interesting odds and ends from the ladies in this week's Grapevine Extra. Well, there's no birthdays this week and nothing from Vision Norfolk, so it's straight over for some news with Desney and Margaret.
Hello everybody, it's Margaret here and we're about to start with the first part of the news, so if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. Dozens of St George's flags on Gorleston seafront have been torn down just a week after a Labour councillor demanded they were removed. MP for Great Yarmouth, Rupert Lowe, has blasted the disgraceful vandalism after spending £500 of his own money on 164 St George's flags to be proudly displayed across the borough. The 68-year-old MP, who rolled up his sleeves and joined locals to put up the flags himself, said their removal showed a total lack of respect for England's national symbol. Mr Lowe had been contacted by Chris Kelsall, a local carpenter, who asked for help continuing his efforts to brighten up Gorleston seafront with patriotic bunting. Earlier this month, 46 flags were hung by Mr Kelsall and Mr Lowe's team along the promenade, but within 24 hours, every single one had been ripped down. When Mr Lowe's staff returned to replace the stolen flags, they were confronted by Labour councillor Ron Upton, who allegedly told them to take the flags down, sparking a heated exchange. Witnesses say Councillor Upton, who was wearing a badge displaying a Palestinian flag, became aggressive and only backed off when one of Mr Lowe's aides began filming the encounter. Undeterred, Mr Lowe's team rehung all 46 flags. But just 2 weeks later, they were torn down again, leaving the MP furious. Mr Lowe said, "Tearing down our national flags is a disgrace. My official response as MP, if you hate our flag enough to rip it down, why don't you sod off and live somewhere else?" Great Yarmouth is proudly patriotic, the most patriotic corner of England. We should fly our flags with pride. Mr Lowe has vowed for a second time to have all torn down flags on the Gorleston promenade put back on display. Both incidents of flag theft and damage on Gorleston seafront have been reported to Norfolk Police. Locals have expressed anger and disappointment, calling for CCTV to be installed to catch the culprits and ensure the town's flags can fly undisturbed.
And on to Great Yarmouth seafront, where things look a bit more peaceful. Free firework display. The annual Great Yarmouth fireworks display has had a major upgrade. Visit Great Yarmouth has revealed its plans for a free triple display for the autumn half-term seafront spectacular. Fireworks will be set off from 3 points on Central Beach in an evening of family fun, complete with new street acts along the seafront on October the 29th. Before the sky is ablaze, crowds will be able to watch and meet giant winter wonderland birds and fiery friends, Fahrenheit, who will walk along the Golden Mile on stilts from 5 p.m. Organiser and Visit Great Yarmouth CEO Asa Morrison said, "We have the opportunity to upgrade this year from last year's double display. Working with our provider, we can deliver three displays at the same time on Central Beach, creating an amazing display. The displays will take place from 6 p.m. and build on the six successful Big Wednesdays through the summer, which pulled in huge crowds to support seafront businesses. There is no need to book a ticket.
Neighbours have expressed shock after dozens of armed police stormed a flat to arrest a man accused of firing a crossbow at teenagers. Officers in bulletproof vests and carrying rifles were seen entering the front and the rear of Florence Flats in Wellesley Road on Saturday morning. A dog unit was also present as the police entered the property, with the top end of Wellesley Road completely cordoned off. Locals say they saw one man being dragged out of the building and piled into the back of a police car. Police have confirmed a man in his 50s was arrested on suspicion of attempted GBH and taken for questioning, but he has since been released on bail. A spokeswoman for the force said the pre-planned operation was in relation to a call received about 9:30 p.m. on Friday, October the 10th, reporting that at around 7:15 p.m. a man had fired a crossbow towards a group of teenagers on Wellesley Road. She added that nobody was injured in the incident. One man, who lives in the building but did not want to be named, said, "Obviously it was surprising, to say the least, to look out of my window and see so many police with guns marching in. They absolutely charged up the stairs, shouting, 'Police, police,' as they went up, with many standing on the road and around the back of the flats. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be quite so surprised because this is Yarmouth and goodness knows what is going on around us."
Local employers have been urged to employ ex-offenders through a new scheme. The Future Horizons Initiative, developed in partnership with HMP Norwich, seeks to turn trained ex-prisoners into enthusiastic employees, significantly cutting levels of reoffending and homelessness. This comes amid recruiters reporting a shortage of qualified candidates. The call to action came from the Norse Group chief executive, Justin Galliford. He said most companies and public sector organisations struggle to find good candidates. From our experience, the people placed with us have been excellent. He added that employing ex-offenders is not only socially valuable, but makes real commercial sense. The innovative project connects prisoners with potential employers via an online hub. Despite 70% of employers stating they would employ an ex-offender, only 17% currently do. The perception of criminal convictions is cited as a major development. However, the initiative seeks to change this perception by emphasising the rich potential of ex-offenders. At the scheme's launch event, HMP Norwich Governor Declan Moore said the prospect of employment means most people won't come back. With this scheme, employers get to see the person they actually are first, not the person they were. Men who go into employment immediately on release from HMP Norwich have a reoffending rate more than 50% lower than those who do not. Candidates will be risk assessed by the resettlement team at HMP Norwich to ensure suitable role matches.
A man who was arrested after jumping over a fence when a cannabis factory was raided is due in court later this month. Edouard Dider was caught by police in a neighbour's garden after trying to escape over a fence when police kicked the door in at an address on Litchfield Road, Great Yarmouth. The 39-year-old of Howard Street South, Yarmouth, has been charged with being concerned in the production of cannabis. Officers discovered 76 cannabis plants along with hydroponics equipment following the raid on September the 18th. Dider is set to appear at Norwich Crown Court on Friday, having previously appeared before city magistrates last month. The court heard that Dider is an Albanian national who was here illegally and that there were 80 mature plants found across five rooms in the property at Lichfield Road. He was remanded in custody.
The leader of Norfolk County Council has sparked fury after she accused district council colleagues of willful gerrymandering over the biggest shake-up in local government in 50 years. Kay Mason-Billick, the Conservative leader at County Hall, said the government would be extremely irresponsible to even consider the proposals for local government reorganisation tabled by district councils. With all eight councils due to be abolished and replaced, Norfolk County Council has put forward the case for one unitary council. At a meeting of the County Council's Cabinet on Monday, October the 13th, Mrs. Mason-Billick said a single council was the only sensible option and the only one which would make substantial savings while being local at the same time. She said, "What shocks me is the business cases we've seen coming forward for two or three options just do not stack up. They're not financially viable. It's dangerous. It's willful gerrymandering of the figures, and there is no substance to them. This government would be extremely irresponsible to even consider them as vaguely credible options. We know what the figures are. Ours can be looked at in depth, and we can explain them. You can't do that with the other two options on the table. They are a wish list for what they want to see." But Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour group at County Hall, said, "Mrs. Mason-Billick left out the fate of 20,000 council houses and the huge council-owned company, Norse, from her business case. It's some brass neck to claim other figures don't stack up. She is actually accusing all the district councils in Norfolk of conspiring to fiddle the figures and of knowingly promoting dangerous and unsustainable proposals to government. That's plain outrageous. To then go on and tell government ministers they are irresponsible for even considering the other options is deeply concerning for any council leader looking to be taken seriously. This is tragic and desperate behaviour that doesn't serve anybody's interests. The proposals for one, two and three councils have been lodged with the government. Ministers will make a final decision after public consultation. Legislation to create new councils and abolish the old ones will need to go through Parliament. The government is aiming for the new authorities to go live on April the 1st, 2028, with elections to the new unitary councils during the transition year ahead of that."
Following up on a story from last week, a couple who operated a boutique spa retreat in the Broads for 6 years without planning permission have finally seen their business legitimised. Lorraine and Paul Thompson have been granted retrospective approval to change the use of their property, the Black Barn on Market Lane in Filby, to a mixed-use leisure facility. The site includes a spa, treatment rooms, a cafe and four holiday cabins with hot tubs. A previous bid to regularise the business was refused in July 2024 over fears of urbanisation of the countryside. But councillors approved the renewed bid with a number of conditions, requiring the spa and cafe to operate by appointment only and host a maximum of 8 guests overnight.
Grange Smokehouse change of use approved. Councillors have approved plans to turn a hotel into a restaurant 6 years after the change took place. The Smokehouse Bar and Grill started operating at the Grange Hotel in Ormsby in summer 2019. But the landlords only applied for a retrospective planning permission for the change of use in October last year. They said the key change at the site was from a hotel restaurant to a restaurant serving food and drink to the general public. At a meeting of Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Development Management Committee on October the 8th, councillors approved the plans. The venue won Best Norfolk Restaurant and Best Business at the East of England Business Awards in 2021.
An investigation is continuing after a teenage pedestrian was seriously hurt in a fail-to-stop crash on Gapton Hall Road. Another teenager had been driving a white Audi, which was involved in the collision with the pedestrian. That driver failed to stop after the crash at around 5:20 p.m. on September the 10th. The driver has since been arrested on suspicion of causing serious injury by dangerous driving, failing to stop at the scene of a collision, failing to report a collision, driving without insurance, driving otherwise than in accordance with a licence, and possession of Class B and Class C drugs. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning and later bailed. The Norfolk Constabulary spokesman said the suspect had been released on bail until December the 11th as the investigation continues. The pedestrian was taken to hospital with serious injuries after the crash. Anyone with any information or footage is asked to contact Norfolk Police.
Controversial plans for a new holiday park and leisure club in rural Norfolk have sparked an outcry among neighbours. The plans would see the redevelopment of Browston Hall, the historic estate at Browston Green near Galston, into a caravan park and spa complex capable of hosting up to 418 visitors. The application has been submitted in two parts, referring to the east and the south side, with each being decided separately. In the east, 50 lodges, classed as caravans, are planned with a new leisure facility, including 10-pin bowling, snooker, a golf simulator and cafe, taking shape in the existing modern extension to listed Browston Hall. The bar, restaurant, tennis and bowling green will stay. Meanwhile, the driving range building will be demolished to make way for a new spa. On the south side, a 9-hole golf course will be swept away for 32 new lodges in a countryside setting with grassed areas. The plans are facing more than 100 objections from local parish councils, the Norfolk and Suffolk Wildlife Trusts, the Norfolk Badger Trust, as well as concerned members of the public. Neighbours say that Browston, a quiet hamlet with no bus service, cycle lanes or employment infrastructure, is not equipped to handle a 4-fold increase in population. Concerns have also been raised about noise pollution, traffic congestion and public safety. One objection cited fears that intoxicated holidaymakers might attempt to ride local horses, posing risks to both animals and people. In a planning statement, Browston Hall Golf and Leisure Limited stated that the proposals are essential to the long-term sustainability of the business. The company claims the golf course and driving range are currently operating at a loss and remain open only due to financial support from the owner. Browston Hall itself dates back to the 17th century, with significant rebuilding and extensions carried out in the 18th, 19th and 20th centuries.
Four holiday parks on the coast are seeking permission for year-round occupation amid local allegations of threats and disrespect from holidaymakers. The parks are Ormsby Grange Tents and Touring, as well as the Hemsby-based Beach Estate and Sandsgate Caravan Parks, Hemsby Tents and Touring, and Long Beach Park, all owned by the company Fourpenny Limited. The applications, submitted separately by Andrew Grote, are seeking permission to remove the existing seasonal occupancy period restriction of between March the 20th and October the 31st to allow year-long occupation by tents and touring for holiday purposes. Planning statements submitted with the proposals say demand is so high the owners need to expand the parks themselves, but that extending the occupancy period would negate the need for physical expansion. They say there would be a record for each caravan that shows any one unit would not be the sole or principal residence of any one person. This ensures all units remain for holiday accommodation purposes, but allows year-round flexibility of their use and moves away from the traditional seaside holidaymaker pattern, which causes tourism destinations to decline in the out-of-season periods, the applicant stated. A person living on nearby 4 acres estate has strongly objected to the plans, however, complaining about annoyance, threats, abuse, noise and disrespect from those who are visiting. They say management failed to address repeated complaints, including noise pollution from nightly loud music, uncontrolled dogs and parking chaos. One incident saw drunken holidaymakers throw road cones at their windows, they said. I've had a few cases where dogs have entered my front garden and destroyed plants and outdoor lighting. And when confronted to ask them to remove the animals, I have been met with verbal abuse, they added. A decision on the applications, currently in the hands of planners at Great Yarmouth Borough Council, is expected by December the 24th.
Well, much more news in a while, plus Grapevine Extra. But first, prompted by Margaret's look back to 1960 in Extra, a tune you'll recognise and a bit of pop history of which I certainly wasn't aware. Let me come clean. The finished Grapevine that you hear, unlike in days of old, is no longer recorded in one go. The news stories and contributions from the readers are actually recorded on Thursday afternoon. And then Stephen, our chief engineer, sends me the recordings at home over the wonderful web, and then I spend Friday morning going through and taking out any fluffs or noises off, and create individual computer files for each piece, i.e. News 1 and News 2, etc. I then record the intro and the links, etc., and paste everything into order on my computer to give the final result which you hear. So why this earth-shattering explanation? Well, during this week's editing session, spoiler alert, I picked up Margaret's mention of Apache. Whilst deciding which of the three tracks she mentions to play, I googled Apache, and what came up was something I didn't realise, which is that the first recording of the Jerry London tune was by Bert Whedon. There's a name from the days of yore. Now, I didn't realise that he recorded it, probably because it wasn't a hit. I then thought that, as it was so different from the Shadows version, a snatch of which you've heard, which was number one for 5 weeks, you might be interested in hearing it. So, there we are. Which do you prefer, Mr. Whedon's original or the Shadows' massive hit version? I can tell you that the composer, Jerry Lorden, preferred the Shadows, but then he earned a lot of money from their version. Hey-ho! Let's get back to the rest of this week's local news.
A woman is challenging the council's refusal of her plans to open a Chinese takeaway and children's party venue in an unattractive building. Jane Zhang from Galston wants to change the use of Vauxhall House, a two-storey commercial block off Acle New Road near Great Yarmouth Vauxhall Railway Station. Earlier this year, Great Yarmouth Borough Council rejected her application over concerns for the appearance of that part of the town, soon to be the centre of a planned £20 million regeneration project. Planners said the building was utilitarian and unattractive, and that the limited changes outlined in Mrs. Zhang's application had failed to use the opportunity to transform the property. They also said a takeaway could have a harmful impact on the nearby Grade 2 listed Vauxhall Bridge and the town's conservation area. Mrs. Zhang has now appealed the council's decision to the planning inspectorate, stating that the changes do improve the appearance of the building and it would benefit the local economy. According to the plans, the takeaway would be accessed from the existing entrance facing the station. A shop would occupy the rest of the ground floor, whilst the first floor would host a party and function room. Vauxhall House is a standalone building located outside the railway station. Its last known occupier was a cash-for-clothes business. In January 2023, the government gave £20 million to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to redevelop North Quay and transform the area around the town's railway station. Vauxhall Bridge, which connects the railway station to North Quay, was built in the mid-19th century. Originally designed for trains and then used by cars until 1976, in recent years it has been restored for pedestrians and cyclists.
One person has been taken to hospital after a crash forced a road closure. Officers were called to the two-vehicle collision in California Road at the junction with Scrappy Road in California at about 3:30 p.m. on Monday. The crash closed the road for around 2 hours. A spokesman for the East of England Ambulance Service said that one ambulance and an ambulance officer vehicle were sent to the scene. One adult was taken to James Paget Hospital for further assessment and treatment.
The number of people who have died while homeless has nearly doubled in Norfolk amid a record rise nationally. Research by the Museum of Homelessness has revealed 9 people died in the county last year, up from 5 in 2023. The average age of the deaths recorded in Norfolk was just 43 years old. These deaths have been described as unforgivable by campaigners who have called on the government and local authorities to do more to tackle a rising tide of homelessness. Nationally, the figure has reached 1,611, which includes 11 children, an increase of 9% overall. Researchers at the museum said the deaths reported in Norfolk during 2024 occurred across the county, with two deaths recorded in Great Yarmouth, Norwich, West Norfolk and South Norfolk, but only one was recorded in North Norfolk. Three people were reported as having died while sleeping rough on the streets, while the other deaths occurred while the person was in temporary accommodation. Of the ages recorded, the people who died were an average age of 43.
A match was abandoned after a footballer broke two bones during the game. Great Yarmouth Town Reserves were taking on King's Lynn Soccer Club at the Wellesley on Saturday. The match was abandoned after 85 minutes when centre-back Jack Howard was seriously injured. A spokesman for the club said Mr. Howard broke his tibia and fibula late in the game. The statement added, "We wish Jack a full and speedy recovery. Thanks to all helpers, including those who managed to get him into a car when an ambulance was not available for 5 hours. When the game was abandoned, King's Lynn Soccer Club were winning 1-0.
Malcolm Metcalfe visits every Norfolk library. The man who completed an amazing 90 challenges in his 90th year has now visited every library in Norfolk and is preparing for another feat. Malcolm Metcalfe went to all 48 libraries in the county, which he called a privilege. He praised the librarians for their warm welcomes and refreshments. Mr. Metcalfe from Galston also visited a variety of specialised libraries in the county, including Gresham's College in Holt, the Thomas Brown Medical Library at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital, Bradwell Community Library and Norwich Cathedral Library. His challenge extended beyond libraries, with him visiting 38 round tower churches instead of the 22 he originally intended, and 92 village signs across the county instead of the hoped-for 25. Every village sign he visited corresponded to every year of his life. Malcolm's next challenge is a mammoth jigsaw puzzle sale at the Shrublands Youth and Adult Centre in Magdalen Way, Galston, on Saturday, October the 25th, from 1 till 4 p.m. He has collected more than 400 puzzles, all of which will be sold at affordable prices. So let's hope you get your sticks on Saturday morning and then you'll be able to go to this jigsaw puzzle sale. Students from Galston Sixth Form College Year 1 Aspire Group are collecting jigsaws for him. Malcolm said, "It's great that these young students are giving up their time to help my cause." Malcolm thanked Roger Canwell from Mulbarton, who drove him to meet Harry and Pamela in Great Hockham, makers of village signs, and Bob Mitchell, editor of the Village Sign Times, who drove him to more than 30 of them. For more information, you can ring Malcolm on 01493 661138 or email him at 43ironhorse@gmail.com. That's 43 in numbers, ironhorse in small letters and @gmail.com.
Best of British Luxham. He is a lovely man who I'm sure you've heard on Grapevine before. So the best of luck to you, Malcolm. A local holiday park has been named among the best all-inclusive deals in the country. The Sun has compiled a list of the top staycation packages in the UK, where food, drinks, snacks and entertainment are provided on tap. Potter's Resort in Hopton-on-Sea, the first UK all-inclusive holiday, was fourth on the list. The resort offers 3 or 4 night breaks, including 4 meals a day, soft and alcoholic drinks and a daily activity programme. There is also a West End-style show each night. With four meals on offer each day, there's little chance of going hungry, the publication said. At Hopton-on-Sea, all meals are served in the elegant garden restaurant with its domed ceiling, or the gallery, which is a little bit more intimate. Earlier this year, the resort was named Best of the Best by TripAdvisor, based on its hospitality and guest satisfaction.
Falling pupil numbers are likely to have a significant impact on some of Norfolk's smaller schools, and some may close, county councillors have warned. Almost 30 of Norfolk's smaller schools have fewer than 50 pupils, the councillors revealed, amid concern over what the future holds. Education bosses at Norfolk County Council are holding talks with schools about how to plan for the decline, and councillors said changes could be needed for the best interests of children. At a meeting of County Hall's Cabinet on Monday, councillors were told the number of children who started reception year in September was under 8,000, even lower than had been forecast. And Penny Carpenter, Cabinet Member for Children's Services, said demographics suggested it could dip below 6,000 in the years ahead. Mrs. Carpenter said the average age of women having their first child in 2023 had increased to 29 from 27 in 2003, and that the pattern was unlikely to be reversed any time soon. She said, combined with the fact that we already have numerous small schools and declining numbers, this will have a significant impact on school viability in numerous areas. Mrs. Carpenter said 218 primary schools had fewer than 200 pupils, while 29 have fewer than 50 children on roll. She said, in short, Norfolk has more smaller schools than most other local authorities. School funding is directly linked to the number on roll, so education officials are worried that smaller schools, particularly in rural areas, could struggle to make the finances stack up. While the council does not have direct control over all schools, officers are urging school leaders and governors to consider amalgamations or mergers if that helps schools survive. Andrew Jameson, the council's deputy leader, said that there was no blanket rule over the size schools needed to be to remain sustainable.
An investigation into a report of a rape in a Yarmouth cemetery is continuing. The incident was reported to police in the early hours of Friday, October the 10th. A cordon was put in place at the Kitchener Road Cemetery near Sainsbury's as officers conducted inquiries. Officers have yet to establish a victim or a potential perpetrator. It's understood that the report was sent to the police by a third party. A police spokeswoman said, "Inquiries are ongoing to establish the full circumstances of the reported incident. The cordon was removed at around 11 a.m. on Saturday."
A once grand seafront hotel that was overrun with squatters for weeks is now being repaired by its owners. The dilapidated Royal Hotel on Marine Parade had been highlighted as a fire risk when it became apparent that people were living in the empty 55-bedroom building. Concerns were also raised about antisocial behaviour being caused. But now Great Yarmouth Borough Council has confirmed the premises have been secured by the owners, AYA Hotels, who bought the building in 2023 for £1.2 million and the squatters have been removed. A council spokesman said the council has been liaising with the owners of the Royal Hotel, who have ensured the property has been secured. The owners have workers on site currently carrying out repairs and renovations. Great Yarmouth MP Rupert Lowe had also intervened and called for the council to take action about antisocial behaviour at the site and even to have the squatters removed. The Grade 2 listed building was originally built in 1840 and was first called the Victoria Hotel. The hotel has literary connections, as Charles Dickens stayed there between 1848 and 1849 when he was working on David Copperfield. In addition to that, and quite fittingly for its former name, Queen Victoria's eldest son, Edward VII, took a liking to its seafront views and would whisk his mistress, singer and stage actress Lily Langtry, away there on romantic getaways. These secret rendezvous eventually prompted the hotel to change its name, and his crest even adorns the top of the building. Today, the four-storey hotel premises has 55 rooms for guests, as well as three bedrooms for staff and a manager's flat. Its bar and tea room can host 60 guests, whereas its ballroom can fit 100 people for functions when operating as a hotel.
Chico's Seaside Restaurant has reopened after a month-long refurbishment. The restaurant in Great Yarmouth closed in September to undergo cosmetic work and welcomed customers back on Thursday night. Owners Chico and Maxine Agathoclius have been at the helm of the restaurant for more than a decade and said that the works were needed to keep the restaurant feeling up to date. Customers can expect a more comfortable interior as well as attractive outside alterations, Mrs. Agathoclius explained. The works have allowed us to keep the restaurant feeling clean and fresh, especially the entrance. The restaurant on Marine Parade has been repainted both inside and out, and the steps outside have been renovated. Mr. Agathoclius had been in the catering trade for more than 50 years before deciding to branch out and open his own restaurant. "We serve fresh food from local suppliers," he added. "We source our fish and lobsters from local stores and get our steaks from the local butchers."
Multiple emergency services were called to the Norfolk Broads to help find a missing man. He was reported missing at 9 p.m. on Monday, with the Hemsby lifeboat called to help locate the individual in the Rockland-St Mary area. Police and fire crews joined the Hemsby Broads rescue team as they searched for the man. Officers and the Coast Guard also conducted land-based searches, and the East of England Ambulance Service was on standby. The man was later found safe and well. Hemsby Broad's rescue was stood down and returned to its base in the early hours of Tuesday morning.
The UK's oldest sugar factory opened its gates for beet deliveries this week as it kicks off its latest campaign following an £11 million energy efficiency investment. British Sugar's site at Cantley was built on the banks of the River Yare in 1912, and the plume of steam rising from its chimney has since become a prominent landmark on the Broads skyline. The factory produces an average of 130,000 tonnes of sugar every year from around 1 million tonnes of sugar beet grown by East Anglian farmers. A new £11 million combined heat and power CHP plant will come online at the start of the 2025/26 sugar beet campaign. It will power factory operations and is expected to increase energy efficiency as well as reducing annual site emissions by 16,000 tonnes. Further investments have also been made this summer to reinforce reliability across the Cantley site, including replacing decade-old equipment and installing new electrical infrastructure. Site General Manager Andy Dilks said, "As the UK's oldest sugar beet factory, it's important that we maintain our equipment that we have to the best of our ability, but to also invest for the future. Our new CHP plant demonstrates our commitment to reliability, efficiency and reducing our environmental impact. The team are looking forward to getting the campaign underway and reaping the benefits of our recent investments." The CHP plant is set up for fuel flexibility should hydrogen become available across the East Anglia Energy Network in the future, said British Sugar. The company said the team at Cantley is always striving to be a good neighbour and is aware of the need to minimise disruption on the local community, particularly with ongoing roadworks on the A47 affecting travel to and from the factory. Mr. Dilks said there is a higher volume of inbound and outbound traffic during our campaign period, but I'd like to reassure local residents that we are doing all that we can and have communicated clearly with all stakeholders regarding the travel disruption and diversion routes.
A hit Norfolk attraction has launched the Pumpkin Patch ahead of its Halloween events for 2025. Rocks and Barns has opened its Pumpkin Patch for weekends throughout October and all of half-term week. The site has lots of photo opportunities, as well as the chance to carve pumpkins and enjoy a meal from one of the food trucks, with entry to the patch free. This is the second year the fields have opened to the public in a bid to make it accessible to everyone, with all the pumpkins homegrown at Rocks and Barns and priced by size. From October the 25th to November the 2nd, the Get Me Out of Here event will be back for a second year after proving a big hit in 2024. Ticket holders will be able to make their way around the spooky maze, play garden games in the field of fun and meet the animals. Working in partnership with the Bug Park, there will also be a range of creepy crawlies on display. Tickets are £12.95, £3 for one-year-olds and free to children under one.
Well, that's it for this week's news. But if you have a few minutes to spare, keep listening for Grapevine Extra. Well, welcome to Grapevine Extra, where this week Margaret has a look at the past, including old news from 1960, and, as usual, Desney has the best of the coming week's TV.
So on television this week, we have two new dramas. The first one is The Forsytes. And if you remember, Margaret was reading about the 60s just now, and this reminds me that the original Forsyte saga was in 1967. I didn't have a television then. I was a young teacher flat sharing with another young teacher. And we were married. Both of us were married the next year to our respective fiancés. But at the time, we didn't have a television, so we weren't among the 18 million, can you believe, who watched the final episode of the Forsyte saga. It attracted, as I say, 18 million viewers for the final episode, and the stories about the wealthy Forsyte family navigating rivalries, love and business in a world where the firstborn son was important to everyone and succession was an obsession. Jack Davenport, who plays James Forsyte in this version, the youngest son, so not terribly important. And he says, "I think everyone likes watching miserable rich people trying to kill each other. And these people superficially have everything but are being eaten alive." Well, if you remember the first one, you may want to compare it to this one. The other drama starting this week is called The Ridge. And a drug addict and a drug-addicted anaesthetist, Mia. She is trying to escape her problems in Scotland by leaving her native Scotland to fly to New Zealand for her estranged sister Cassie's wedding. And she's just at the start of more troubles because after a mid-flight terrifying distress call from Cassie, she makes the shocking discovery when she arrives that Cassie has plunged to her death from a mountain ridge. She and Cassie's fiancé, he was her fiancé, before that terrible plunge, team up to search for answers to what looks as if it might have been foul play. So these two dramas, The Forsytes and The Ridge, start respectively on Thursday the 23rd on BBC Two at 9pm for The Ridge, and Monday the 20th for The Forsytes on Channel 5 at 9pm. Then there are some factual programmes you might like to see. The Fletcher's Family Farm on Sunday morning at 11:30am. This is the third series. And Kelvin, Liz and their four children will tell you more tales of their charming farming roles. The other one, the other factual one, is Joe Swash in Forgotten Young Dads, which is on Monday on BBC Three at 8pm. Joe Swash himself was a young dad in his mid-20s, and he says they're often overlooked, but he wants to celebrate the young fathers who are changing the mould of parenting and providing positive role models despite the odds being stacked against them. And another factual programme is the Pride of Britain Awards, which is introduced by Carol Vorderman and Ashley Banjo. And this is the 26th annual ceremony, which honours and celebrates the nation's unsung heroes, young and old, and amongst whom there are fundraisers, campaigners, children who have overcome incredible odds, and heroes who have risked their lives to save others. And they are planning to have many famous faces there to surprise some of these winners. Now, for a few sports that are on this week. If you're a Norwich City fan, you'll be wanting to listen to the radio on Saturday. Norwich are playing Bristol City, and that's Mr. Manning, Liam Manning's old club. So that should be very interesting, as he's under a bit of pressure at the moment, isn't he? The other outstanding sports for the week are probably the United States Grand Prix, which is on Five Live Sports Extra, as well as Sky Formula One, Sky Main Event, and Now. Because it's in America, the race actually starts at 8pm, the programme just a little before that. There is also Women's One Day Cricket World Cup on Sky Sports Cricket, which is on at 10am most days of next week. It's taking place in India. And there's another one that's a bit different to the usual ones. World Gymnastics is taking place in Indonesia. It's on Wednesday and Thursday on BBC Two at 1pm and on Friday at 7:30am, if you want to get up that early for a bit of gymnastics. And the big football match of the week is probably the one on Sunday at 4pm between Liverpool and Manchester United, which is the kick-off at 4:30, which is on Sky Sports Main Event, Premier League, Now and Five Live. So there you are. There's your sports and other programmes for the upcoming week.
And I've been meandering through the pages of the Great Yarmouth Mercury from October 1960. God, many moons ago. And these are the items that caught my eye. Some of you might have heard this before, but I think it is interesting. Gorston's early closing day is to be Wednesday instead of Thursday. This watch committee recommendation was made after representation by Gorston Chamber of Commerce and was approved by Great Yarmouth Town Council. Now, I can remember at this time it caused a great deal of upset, because if you worked in a shop in Yarmouth and your loved one worked in a shop in Gorston, you couldn't spend your half day together. Well, I never. Another interesting item, phased plan to remove prefabs at Gorston. Yes, I can remember them. First steps in the plan were to remove the 711 prefab bungalows which comprised the Shoblands estate at Gorston. They were approved by the Housing Committee. The phased clearance programme delivered the estate into seven areas, and the prefabs would be removed over 7 years. And this time, news of a building that was being opened. A state hostel for old folk of Galston. Magdalen House, the corporation's new hostel on the Magdalen College estate, will soon be open. The new hostel will take 40 old and infirm residents and 20 blind residents. The building, started last year, has cost £69,000 and furniture and fittings another £8,000. It has 12 single bedrooms, 23 double, one bedroom with four beds, large lounges, modern kitchen and toilet facilities, special handicraft rooms for the blind, and a veranda. There'll be a resident staff of four attendants, a resident cook and several daily helpers. And on to entertainment now. The summer shows had all finished. The holidaymakers gone home, so it's back to the good old pictures. And at the Regal, there was Janet Leigh and Tony Perkins in Psycho. The aquarium was Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones in Carousel. Oh, I love that. On Saturday nights, the good old Floral Hall offered a modern dance night, admission 4 and 6. Now, I rather suspect that 90% of courtships began in the heady atmosphere of that place in the 1960s. I seem to remember they never sold alcohol. You had to get your hand rubber stamped at half time, then you went across to the Pier Hotel for your shandy. If you wanted to stay at home, you could buy a 17-inch television set for 59 guineas from Car and Car, or you could rent one for 6 shillings a week. And what could you buy back in 1960? Well, at the top end of the market, you could purchase a squirrel coat for 145 guineas or a musquash... Oh, I can't pronounce that word. You take over, Destiny. A musquash coat for 79 guineas from the Norwich Fur Company. Good old Arnold's, no longer with us, offered ladies' velour coats at £7.19 and sixpence, while at Yarmouth stores they had men's donkey jackets at 48 and sixpence. Electric House had GEC cookers at £74. Mace shops had tins of creamed rice, 10 pence. Shorty's biscuits at 7 pence. OK sauce, 1 and tuppence. Russian vodka, half a litre, 29 and sixpence. Dry sack sherry, 19 and sixpence. And Caroni Navy Rum, 39 and sixpence. In the situation's vacant column, I saw this advert. Lloyd's Bank require a young woman, 16 to 18, for clerical duties, salary £295 per annum. Career can be continued after marriage. Oh, my word. And for the motorists, Clues Cars offered a Ford Consul Mark II, 1956, pearl grey, two-tone interior leather, heater and other extras for £485, and a Ford Popular £195, a 1955 Austin A30 with heater £295. And to end with, the Mercury had a personal column in which I spotted the following. Is anybody, male or female, interested in forming a discussion group? Philosophy, occultism, yoga, etc. Must be sincere. This is one that worried me. Gert, come home to 128 at once. Ill with worry over you. Urgent. Daisy. Did Daisy ever find Gert? I wonder. Now, what were we listening to in October 1960? It's Now or Never, Elvis Presley. Kathy's Clan, the Everlys. Oh, I love that. And Apache by the Shadows. Oh, my lost youth.
Thank you.
And this is a piece that I think was written for us octogenarian readers this week. Destiny's having a laugh, but she can't deny it. And it's entitled, What is a Senior Citizen? It is one that was here before the pill, television, frozen foods, contact lenses, credit cards, and before man walked on the moon. For us, time-sharing meant togetherness, not holiday homes, and a chip meant a piece of wood. Hardware often meant nuts and bolts, and software wasn't even a word. Stop laughing, Desney. It's serious. We got married first, then lived together, and thought cleavage was something that butchers did. A stud was something that fastened a collar to a shirt, and going all the way meant staying on a double-decker to the bus depot. We thought that fast food was what you ate in Lent, Big Mac was an oversized raincoat, and crumpet what we had for tea. In our days, grass was mown, pot was something you cooked in, Coke was kept in the coal house, and a joint was cooked on Sundays. We are today's senior citizens, octogenarians. We are a hardy bunch when you come to think how the world has changed.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week's newsreaders will be Dusty, Margaret at 2 and Julie. So we hope we can look forward to welcoming you then for much more of your local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope you stay safe and well. From everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now.